We're coming, and we ain't backing down.
We don't need a bunch of cats in here. Yeah, looking in the mirror.
I'm bitterly disappointed with the officiating today.
Guys being dudes.
And they run through our like through a tin horn, man.
What's up, dude? My name is Stephen Godfrey. Thank you for joining us for this very special, very, very different podcast. We've been talking about this for months. We've been talking about this for as long as this weird little film that won Sandra Bullock an Academy Award kept popping up in the zeitgeist of college football. We talked about creating a commentary track for The Blind Side. You're about to listen to that with myself and my former editor, neighbor here in Nashville, Ryan Naney of Shutdown Fullcast, et cetera, late of Banner Society, my old boss. The only thing I have for you right now in advance is how to cue your film with the audio track. We've talked a little bit about that. You'll hear us say it a little bit on the actual feed. So when you hit play on this file, you don't have to have your movie ready to go yet. There's a little bit of there's an intro. We're going to discuss some things. We're going to go over the kind of the history of the film. And then also we will talk about cueing your file, if you will. So you don't have to do it right away. You can go ahead and hit play or continue as you have and listen as we transition over to the file. There will be a point in the track you're about to hear where we get you queued up. And so basically what you're going to do is there's going to be a production logo at the beginning of the film. It's, you know, we talk about on the track and I don't have the number in front of me, but it's like X amount of seconds in. I just rented the film off Prime because I couldn't find I didn't want to give the movie any more money. I'm not a fan, obviously, but I couldn't find a physical copy anywhere near me in like an old DVD player or whatever. So rented it. It's going to be the same if you use most of those VOD rental services or if it's on when you listen to this, it could be on or off a streaming apparatus. It's going to be roughly the same. If you notice a lag or you notice that we're ahead of something you're seeing or behind it, just pause whichever one is ahead for a split second. That's the best way to do this. And I speak from experience on this. So without further ado, enjoy myself, Stephen Godfrey and Ryan Naney, giving the exact amount of respect that the film The Blind Side deserves. And thank you for your support of Split Zone Duo. Ryan Naney, what is your knowledge of memory of The Blind Side, book or film?
I read the book several years ago, and I remember thinking it was fine.
Where are you in life when you're reading this book? Because this is a long time ago.
Probably just out of law school.
Okay.
Probably like young, bushy-tailed lawyer.
Not yet a college football blogger, media.
I don't think so.
2007.
I don't know about you, but I find the longer I have worked in sports media, the less I'm interested in consuming sports media things.
Absolutely.
Outside of it.
Absolutely. If we can look, we can turn this into a roundtable discussion on the Gilded Age real fast if you want to. We'll just bait and switch everyone who's listening to this. I love the set design.
But yes, I remember reading the book and thinking it was fine. And I think I knew about Michael Lewis before then. And I think I knew most of the most of the fundamental story going into it. So it wasn't, wow.
Yeah.
This is,
what, that's actually, what did you know about Michael Orr and all of this sort of, because this is that Michael Orr happens the same time or Ed Orgeron gets hired at Ole Miss and mm-hmm. there's all the crazy recruiting. So, obviously, like as an alumnus, I covered the team in 2005, which is when a large portion of this book takes place. But just as a college football person, was it as noticeable as we thought it was in Mississippi?
I do remember it being notable that this highly touted recruit had gone to Ole Miss at a time when Ole Miss didn't consistently get players like
right.
that. That's all I really remember it as is like, oh. This was kind of a recruiting coup for Ole Miss, but I didn't know anything about the Tuies. I didn't have any sense of the, without getting too far into the weeds here, Mississippi is not like Florida. And so I don't know if there's a Tuie family at the University of Florida.
With a setup like that, that sentence could have gone.
I know. You're right. But I've never seen the movie.
So there are no busybody Southern moms in Gainesville?
to maybe, I don't know. Don't know any personally. And the problem is because, you know, as you and I have talked about before, Florida is full of people who aren't from Florida.
Right.
So it's like there's busybody Midwestern moms and there's busy, you know, I have a busybody West Coast mom.
Mm-hmm.
But the way in which they busybody and what they busybody over is different. And,
yes,
you know, I do remember I had one classmate growing up whose mom was like, in many ways, the Southern mom stereotype, super into Elvis, had that Memphis accent and affectation in a lot of ways. Very nice lady.
I want to talk about accents for a second, okay, because just to set the scene here, Ryan has not seen this film.
Correct.
So real fast.
I know Sandra Bullock won Oscar for it.
So this film passes through the media buzz cycle of Oscar winner. It is attached to college football.
When does the film come out?
The film, so I'll back up for 1 second, okay, because I had a weird vantage point on this. I had left, by the time I leave the media to go work at TNA and do the wrestling stuff, this film is in pre-production, but they are not sort of listing the people at the University of Mississippi as producers, okay, but they're almost involved fundamentally as like QCs in, yes, the script process.
Right.
So because of that, I end up getting a copy of the script in like 2008 or 9, mm-hmm, pretty early on. We should say it was, obviously the book is written by Michael Lewis. The film was adapted, directed, and written by John Lee Hancock. Spoiler, it's not a good film. And we will get into the particulars of this.
It came out in 2010?
So that was the first thing you asked me. 2009.
Okay.
But John Lee Hancock, not a bad filmmaker or screenwriter.
Okay.
If you are familiar, and we're going to kind of get into this with like your awareness of Oscar season, or these, like, are these films appointment viewing? He's had an interesting career. I really like, there's a movie called The Founder about Ray Kroc, who started McDonald's.
I'm aware of it, but I haven't seen it.
Okay. Yeah. Really good. Batman's in it.
Yeah. So
right.
Okay. Michael Keaton's in it. Yeah.
Do you remember The Rookie? Dennis Quaid?
About
your hometown,
yeah,
Tampa,
yeah, yeah,
Ray.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
Midnight.
There are like 8 movies like that one.
Yes.
But yeah, go ahead. Sorry.
He wrote the script that adapted Midnight in the Garden of Good and Evil.
Okay.
Which,
yep,
film hammy, amazingly hammy Jude Law, Spacey moments in, mm-hmm, there. But like the script is solid. The guy's not terrible. They didn't get a guy like doing Hardee's commercials to make this film.
Hammy was kind of appropriate as well, based on on everything you've heard about, like the real life version of it. It's like that hammy was probably the right way to air.
So, as one of my former editors, you are invariably going to find that role like muscle memory today. Mm-hmm. And the thing that you're going to pull me back on from filibuster is going to be accents. Mm, and okay, so, when I think, okay, of that movie, I think of accents. But
yes,
today,
that's fair.
Accent is going to be that. That's the key word to listen out for, kids. So this guy's not terrible. A couple more of the little things. Okay, that one kind of sucked. That was like a thriller that got relegated to the HBO Max launch. Let's see, Saving Mr. Banks, which I honestly thought was a Spielberg, like a crappy Spielberg movie. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. He's decent. All right, he's decent. He's within the system. He's also technically Southern, and as we're about to learn about this film's interpretation of the South,
what
and
technically Southern,
that's where I'm going. It's a swath. They cut wide. John Lee Hancock technically is, I guess, there's just a wide portion. He's listed as originally being from Longview, Texas, and he got an undergrad and a JD from Baylor.
Okay,
you and I have sort of different Southern experiences, but I think we are united in that we would describe a person with that background as Texan. We wouldn't necessarily say they are Southern.
I think most people with that background would self-identify that way as well.
Yeah. Okay. All right. I want you to go in as pure as possible.
Okay. Yeah.
But, and we can talk about this real fast. Sandra Bullock, I have no opinion on at all. I'm doing all these sort of like precursors before, mm-hmm, we get into this, and, mm-hmm, the knives come out, because there's a lot of really talented people involved in this film. I'm fine with Sandra Bullock.
I have one.
I mean, obviously you have a thing with speed.
I have a thing with speed. You have a thing with speed. She's fantastic.
Yes.
So this comes out in 2009.
Yes.
The other Academy Award winning vehicle to which Sandy Bullock is attached, that is derided as sort of like saccharine and hasn't aged well. And even at the time, people were like, I really don't know why this one is Crash. When did Crash come out?
Crash predates this. I want to say it's closer to, and I have to, you have to relegate Crash movie. Yeah, I said, I was going to say, honestly, 2006. It's 2004.
Okay.
Now, she's a smaller part of
that.
She's
a smaller part of that.
And Crash, while saccharine and truly terrible, arguably the worst best picture ever before Green Book, or maybe kind of drawing the same breath.
Right.
Has largely been debunked as like an actual Scientology campaign at the time. Because the reason I can comfortably say that is the guy who made the movie, Paul Haggis, is an ex-Scientologist. He was blackmailed by the church and said, like, yeah, they got behind the promotion of this film at the time.
Okay.
So yeah, old Sandy's career is it's at an interesting point when she does this film. Again, she is from, and this is going to matter a lot to me as we go on. I like her as an actress. I guess I'm fine. I'm fine with her as an actress.
I don't see her in a movie and I'm like, oh, God.
I'm neutral.
Sure. That's fair.
Sandra Bullock is from a place that I actually lived, Arlington, Virginia.
Okay.
Okay. Again, we both worked at Vox. We spent some time in DC.
Yep.
One of the most anonymous places in America. And I lived in Northern Virginia.
By design in some ways.
Absolutely. Yeah. Like for almost 10 years, I lived in various spots in Northern Virginia.
Yeah.
It's not as if someone her age would have not heard like that, the traditional Southern accent, even the tropey version, like the bright white light, as we say.
Yep.
It's just that she obviously does not possess it.
Sure. And she's not somebody you necessarily think of as doing heavy accent, like really diving into a role in that way, where you're like, oh man, did you see Sandy Bullock playing this Portuguese artist?
Well, and I mean,
like, no.
In the pantheon of, like, I don't want to get too wide here, but in the pantheon of Hollywood films, like, accents are hard. We don't trust a lot of actors to do it.
Sure.
We're all biased going in. The Brits probably are the best at doing us. We don't do the Brits very well.
Correct.
I would point out in her bio, her dad was allegedly a vocal coach who was originally from Alabama. So I felt like, look, there's confidence in this woman's career where she's like, I can fucking nail a big body Memphis accent. The thing that's going to jump out, if you've never watched this film, if for some reason this is how you're watching the film for the first time, I wouldn't advise that at all.
Go watch Speed now.
It's not a Memphis accent.
Right.
It's not even close.
For the listener, who is like the most identifiable public figure that you can think of to say like, this is who you may have heard, male or female, whatever, who has the accent that you're talking about. So we sort of know what the compass direction should look like.
This is going to be kind of a weird answer, but I double checked. So with all major Southern cities, especially between like the 50s and the 90s, you're going to have divergent accents by race. So we're talking about the white Memphis accent.
Yeah.
If you want to hear one that's truly authentic, do you remember Chris Parnell from Saturday Night Live?
Yeah,
so he's from Memphis.
And from Archer.
And Archer, yes.
Right.
He can actually do his sort of native accent. That's not the most famous one, and I'm looking at Memphis right now. Most people have sort of stamped it out, tamped it down, all right? So I don't think that there's like a go-to necessarily. You could include Justin Timberlake, but again, like most performers have refined their dialect to a point where it's just non-existent.
Okay.
I don't sound like I'm from Georgia because I grew up in 9 different places. Right. It's sometimes hard for me to catch the ear.
Yeah.
This is as nice as I'm going to get. Okay, are there any other questions before we start this film? Are there any other thoughts?
Well, let's do this very quickly.
Yes.
If you would, who else was nominated with Sandy Bullock the year that she won an Oscar, which I believe is to date her only Oscar trophy?
Oh, yeah, without a doubt.
Okay, okay.
This was the vehicle, and I don't know how inside baseball people want to get or care about, but this was the vehicle where you take a box office entity in an actor or an actress, and you rub them with the prestige cycle, which is like the Academy Awards,
Oscar
the
bait.
Emmys, or whatever.
Yeah,
Oscar bait.
Right.
This is just by design, like a perfect vehicle for a white, middle-aged leading actress to go and get that acclaim she hasn't had before. Because this is a role, and you and I are both pretty devoted 30 Rock fans. And I don't even want to mention that early, but you will at
this
certain points in this film, there is a sort of meta gonzo feeling, mm-hmm. because you know you don't have to be from the South to feel it. I think there was actually the most accurate, I thought, review of this film was from The Guardian in London, and they nailed it.
Yeah,
not positively. I can read it in a second, but before I answer some of your questions, this script was written with an actress in mind that is not Sandra Bullock. This script was designed specifically to be a vehicle for an actress who already had these two elements that I'm talking about.
So
the prestige rub and the box office bankability. I sound like I'm hosting Entertainment Tonight now.
Is it a very Nashville person?
Nashville? No. Southern?
Okay.
Yes.
Okay. You can probably guess who I was thinking of instead.
Nashville?
Yeah.
At this point in time?
I think so.
We're about to have a discussion about Cela Ward.
You don't think Reese Witherspoon had the profile at this point?
I think she's too young at this point.
Maybe so.
That's the biggest problem. Now, today?
Yeah,
this
sure.
is
okay.
a Reese.
You're right,
like,
you're right.
I'm going to go ahead and say something. Okay.
The gritty reboot.
This is an even worse film because this is a Reese Witherspoon produced, Reese Witherspoon starring vehicle, mm-hmm. which is just like gratingly Southern. We don't have to get too personal in how much, I won't speak for you. Living in Nashville, the sort of brand of Southern that comes off of her is just, it's, spine tingling. Okay. It was Julia Roberts, which makes a lot of sense for the time, right?
Yes.
Okay. Sandra Bullock beats out Helen Mirren.
Uh-huh. For what?
The Last Station. Did you see that?
No.
Carey Mulligan for An Education.
Okay.
Great film. I'm going to butcher the name. Gabourey Sidibe for Precious,
uh-huh.
which is sort of a phenomenon film.
Yep, yep.
And Meryl fucking Streep for Julia and Julia.
Oh, wow. Which is a very nice piece of
which is like
network.
On the Meryl scale, a ground rule double, and still, Jesus.
Yeah.
So this is, okay, this is sort of how, in case any of you are listening to this and you're just sports fans, the level of contrived that the Oscars are, I don't think people understand. Do you know that this film was nominated for Best Picture?
And this was before Best Picture had expanded
this
to
is,
10 or whatever.
I'm glad you brought that up.
Yeah.
This is the year it expands.
You suddenly see the chaff.
Okay, this is the 12-team playoff of the Oscars.
Yes. This is a 4-loss Oklahoma State filling a spot. In case you're curious, The Hurt Locker won the Best Picture. I like that movie a lot. Avatar, Blindside, District 9, An Education, Inglourious Bastards, Precious, A Serious Man, Up in the Air, which is the Clooney Reitman film, and then also Up, which they both came out like a month apart.
The animated film, Up. Yeah.
All really, no problem with any of those films, except this one is just insane. I remember at the time people were like, oh, Avatar got nominated.
Yeah.
This was the sort of like, we got to get mainstream.
Yeah.
All right. So we got the Oscar thing out of the way.
Okay.
As we go through this, there are pieces, and especially there's actors I really like that are in this film. I think this film was more than likely a paycheck move for a lot of like really good Southern character actors.
Okay.
Specifically, and I'm going to pull up one. I have a rule. What is your familiarity with Deadwood?
The HBO show?
Yeah.
I think I watched 2/3 of it. It was one of those where I watched it until I didn't have HBO at the time.
Right.
And then I didn't keep up.
Which is what you used to do. Yeah.
I've seen a lot of it.
Okay. So I have a rule that if you have one Deadwood alumnus, chances are this is going to
Nick
be
Offerman
somewhat
counts.
Interesting, right?
Yeah.
Okay. If you have more than one Deadwood alumni, you feel like you're going into a good or very good product.
I like that. I like that theory.
This film has two.
Okay.
And yet sucks ass.
Who are
they? Kim Dickens.
Uh-huh.
So who's Jody,
the
sort of rival brothel kind of leader, right? Kim Dickens, very Southern, graduated from Vanderbilt, originally from Alabama. Uses her natural accent the way like a Holly Hunter or like would. Great actress. If I'm not a Walking Dead fan, but I know she's on one of the Walking Dead shows. Fantastic actress. Ray McKinnon, huge fan of. Ray McKinnon played the preacher on Deadwood. He is he's in the Hugh Freeze role here, which by the way, he is not Hugh Freeze in the film, which is weird because, and stay with me here, Hugh Freeze will literally pop up in this film for like 5 frames.
Yeah.
But in real life, Michael Orr's high school coach was Hugh Freeze.
Right.
For whatever reason, and I have a strong suspicion having watched the script develop, the Freeze character comes off worse and worse and worse as the actual shooting script manifests. And so he is simply referred to as Coach Cotton. And as we watch the show, they literally said, God, what's a Cotton?
Talk about a 30 Rock skit.
Again, I think you'd appreciate that. Ray McKinnon, uh-huh. One of my favorite people in terms of creators. If you've ever seen the show Rectify, it won a Peabody Award. And if you're listening to this in either one of our podcast universe, we're both all sort of huge Walton Goggins fans. Mm-hmm. He and Walton Goggins won an Academy Award together in 2001 for a short film, kind of like launched their careers. So there's talent all over this thing. Kathy Bates is in this movie. Right. Who doesn't love a Kathy Bates, yep. Right? There's a guy.
This is the second best Kathy Bates football movie behind The Waterboy.
Exactly. Also, the lesser realistic of the two, mm-hmm. one might mm-hmm. add. There's also an actor named Irony Singleton. Again, it's a Walking Dead thing. It's pretty obvious they cast it out of Atlanta.
Yeah.
They cast it for Southern character actors the same way that a show like Walking Dead that films in Atlanta did. Irony Singleton, if you're a Walking Dead fan, he's on that. The reason I bring him up, he's going to play a gangster in this film that it may be one of the most humiliating roles for a black
gangster?
A gangster.
Okay.
A gangster.
Okay.
All right. Yep. I think what I'm noticing from you already as I sort of walk you through some things that I'm going to react to is how sort of banal and germane, sort of like gimmicky it sounds like these characters are. Yeah. Get ready.
Okay.
All right. With that in mind, there's one technical thing that if you're listening to this track and you want to watch the film along with us, what I have done, unfortunately, which is something that I swore to Ryan I would not do, which is I broke down and spent the $7 on Amazon to purchase this film, thus enriching several individuals again. So what I'm going to do is right at, this is the Amazon file. It should be the same, I looked, as the iTunes file. This is not currently as we record
this.
The
level of dedication. My God.
I know. It pains me to give them a dollar and a quarter or whatever the fuck it is. Most of these files are the same. As we record this in December of 2023, this film is not streaming on any of the major platforms. So you'll have to go rent it from wherever you want to rent a movie from. It should be a 2-hour and 8-minute file. You will see the mid-aughts version of the Warner Brothers logo, and it will do the shiny thing over the Warner Brothers backlot. Then you will see a graphic for the production company. So we're going to cue this up right now, and the production company's name is Alcon Entertainment. When you see the little circle R for the registered trademark, it's the 25-second mark. Hit pause, okay? Because this is where we're going to cue the film. And in a second, I'm going to say, and play, and then you guys can watch it along with us in real time. So for the interest of time, this is a 2-hour film, roughly. Ryan has never seen this film. We are going to have to be sort of tight and concise about what we say and when we say it, because although this doesn't necessarily have the sort of like labyrinthian logic of some sort of like David Lynch thriller, mm-hmm. I want you to be...
Tenet.
Yeah, this is... No. This is not... Wait, what? Never wanted closed caption more in a fucking movie theater. I'm so embarrassed.
It's very loud.
Especially in your early 40s, because you think
yeah,
it's
sure.
you.
Yeah.
And then I've seen like countless YouTube videos where like, no, he just doesn't have a good sound mix. Yep. He just fucking, he Correct. Thinks people can hear what they can't.
Yep.
Which is why Tom Hardy had to redo Bane, the whole fucking Bane, after the fact, which they could do in post because you don't see his mouth. All right. So we are at the 25-second mark. I'm about to say and play. What we're going to do is we're just going to roll through. All right. And play.